Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. Today, I am joined by Mark Sharona. How's it going, Mark?
It's going well, Michael. How are you?
Well, thank you so much for joining. And I know that just to give my listeners a little background, I know I'd asked you beforehand if you'd like to be called Bishop or Mark, or Doctor, and you preferred Mark. And I know that you said doctorates don't really mean much these days.
Well, it's not that I don't value the education. I just think sometimes I earned the degrees, right? I've got two doctorates. I earned them. They don't make me more human, do they?
No.
They don't make me more of a human. So I'd rather be known for being human.
Yeah.
I may know a little bit more in a certain, but even with a doctorate, you only are a doctorate in the stuff you did research in. So it doesn't automatically make you an expert on everything. But today, in today's world, everybody wants to be an expert on everything. And I'm probably the first one to admit I'm dumber than a rock in most things.
Is that why you chose going into the clergy? Because you didn't? No, I'm kidding.
I went into ministry. I had a sense of a call, right? But I've always wanted to be in the people helping business. I love people.
Yeah.
And I want to come alongside them, and in all their pain, and all their suffering, and all their struggles, and I've also been fascinated by what makes us tick, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, the intersection has always been, in that regard, in people helping, has been theology and psychology. Nice. So somewhere in that intersection, I have found space to operate within.
Now, you have been in ministry now for 50 years, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm sure that you've probably in 5 decades seen anything and everything that anybody could ever see. And
yeah, the best and the worst, right?
Is there anything?
Somehow I've survived. I'm still here.
Hey, you want to know something?
I've even been in celebrity Christianity. So I'm one of those guys that was on Christian television all around the world for years. So I've been in that world as well.
So is there anything in your 5 decades of ministry that has ever surprised you, ever seen anything or anybody that has just that stands out inside your mind?
I think a lot of things surprise me, right? But I would argue that if I look back, what has probably surprised me the most, not something that stands out as odd, but how many people there are that just simply want to live in a way that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't give people enough credit for the ways in which they look at reality. And look, now I realize right now we're in a culture where conspiracy theories are, and I've seen the worst of that in the church with conspiracy theories, so we won't even go there. But mm-hmm. I don't think that represents the majority of people. I think it's just the echo chambers that we've fallen into these days that have just bred that kind of insanity. But I the regular people, the down-to-earth people that just want to live a life of purpose, I think there's so many of them that we just need to remember that there's a lot of wonderful people on the planet that we need to just celebrate.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It seems like a lot of people that I talk to have had a lot of bad church experiences anymore, and they just end up leaving the church and saying, if this is God, then I don't want any part of it.
Yeah. Well, and there's profound reason for that, because there are toxic systems.
Yeah.
That exist, and those toxic systems lend themselves to the producing of toxic leaders. Mm-hmm. And we're watching and continue to watch the fallout from all of that these days. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
I do too. I know that we could go to end time prophecy with that one, but I won't go there. I don't want to make my listeners think that deep as far as that.
Yeah, by the way, I'm not into any of that approach to the church. That's just not the way I look at the future. It's not the way I look at theology or eschatology. Sure. None of that falls into the purview of how I look at those things or how I even approach those things.
Okay. But so let's talk about something that you have done. You've written a book called Shadow Self, or maybe that's just one of the books. And I like what it deals with, fear and anxiety, and us just pushing ourselves through it, and just knowing that it's all just more of a mental state more than anything. That's our beliefs.
Yeah, so when we deal with, well, obviously shadow self, obviously I'm borrowing the term shadow from Jungian psychology, right? Those parts of us that we bury consciously or unconsciously, the things we don't want to look at in ourselves. You know, Peter Pan got in trouble chasing his shadow, ends up in Wendy's bedroom, and her solution was to sew the shadow to his heel so that it went away from him. And so the whole story, he doesn't want to grow up, right? So there's just so much in the Peter Pan myth that's so apropos to the human condition. The things, you know, the Island of Lost Boys, wanting to just never grow up, wanting to never grow up and show up in life. And I was, when I wrote the book, I wrote it in light of the many cultural shifts we've been through and the kind of upheavals, not just externally, but what it's done to us internally in the last 6 or 7 years. There's been so many upheavals, and we're still living with the fallout from a lot of it, including COVID, right? Because it rocked. It was a global reset, and it just stirred up existential fears, that because that's what those pandemics do, that they stir up existential fears. Sure. So in the book, what I deal with is I go back 15 years from before now to the DC and the Marvel universe and all the famous DC films. And I grew up on DC and Marvel as a kid. I had the Spider-Man number one annual and the Avengers number one annual that I paid a quarter for as a kid. I came home one afternoon ready to graduate high school, and my mom said, I threw out all those comic books in the garage. And by that time, Spider-Man was already worth almost $50,000. And I just said, and it was too late. The garbage had already come. It was already gone. So it's taken me all this time to forgive my mom. She's 96. I'm still working. Right? So I could have been wealthy, but you know, the DC universe, the way I lay the book out, the DC universe represents a mirror, because they're just like us. The DC superheroes, Batman bleeds, Superman dies. They're as superheroes as they are, they're flawed. They've got issues, right? They've got stuff that they deal with. But the Marvel superheroes, they take a licking and keep on ticking. They're like a window into possibility and potential. So I've got a mirror and I've got a window, and how all of us are looking for heroes when in actual fact, we need to accept what the ancient Greeks understood, that most heroes are tragic heroes. We've lost the sense of what tragedy is about. We think of tragedy in terms of trauma, but tragedy in terms of its mythological significance is something that would help us. You know, mythology was the original psychology, right? It's the reason when you get into the world of psychology from Kierkegaard on, you see them studying the ancient Greek and Roman mythologies and the global mythologies. Joseph Campbell, the hero with a thousand faces, the heroic quest, right? And so I wanted to invite us, as we look through where we've been and where we are and where we hopefully can go, what kind of heroes we're looking for, what kind of heroes and heroines we want to be and become, but not avoiding the fact that brokenness and beauty are commingled in all of us. Mm-hmm. So that we're always going to be, you know, what Brené Brown calls the spirituality of imperfection, right? That we've got to accept that parts of us are good, parts of us are ugly, parts of us are confused, you know, all of that. We've got to accept all of that if we're going to be and become human beings. That's a journey. That's a journey.
And if someone goes on your website, they'll see this quote right by you that says, growth requires letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And,
that's not always easy, right? It's just not always easy. At least I'm 70 years old and I'm still learning. But I'm a dysfunctional Italian from New York, so it takes us a long time to let go. I'm still learning. Like, you know, my grandmother would call me testadura, thickhead, right, or cavados in the dialect. But, so that stuck with me. I'm still a thickhead. It takes me a long time to let go.
Do we have the same grandmother? Because I'm Italian too.
Probably. You know, probably. The question your grandmother would ask my grandmother is, what part of Italy do you come from? And then that would mean that we might not get along, so that, you know, because certain Italians don't get along with other Italians, because they just love to be dysfunctional, right? They just do.
Yes. At least from what I've seen in my family. And that, and lots of food. I mean, every
one of them. Oh, yeah.
It's like a buffet.
Yeah, it's therapy, right? Food for, in Italian, food is the original comfort food. Is like the Italian, it's like comfort food. When you're sick, eat some spaghetti, chicken, and you know, yeah, whatever.
And it's usually from grandma's recipe too. That
absolutely, absolutely
made for like 75 years. And
absolutely,
yeah. So, anyways, I feel sorry for those that are not a part of that culture. But anyways, so. You also, I want to give you a plug on your podcast as well. You have a podcast called The Edge yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now that one is devoted predominantly to theology and spirituality, but I integrate the theology and the psychology, but it is definitely on the theological, psychological side.
I do like, I was on YouTube and I liked the interview you did with Dr. Michael Brown.
That was on his podcast. Yeah, yeah, that was his. That wasn't mine. I can't remember when that was.
Because Dr. Brown is someone that I admire and very much, and he's just about as knowledgeable as anybody can ever be.
Yeah, he's a pretty smart guy. He's a really smart guy.
Yeah. So being in a debate with him would.
Yeah, and he loves debate. Like me, I'm Italian, but I don't like to argue. I tend to just, you want to argue, I'm going to go somewhere else. I just don't want to argue.
Oh, right. So. No, I got you. That's what I do with my family. If it gets too loud or noisy, I'm going to go somewhere else. Yeah. So usually seems to be how it goes. But so you also do life coaching as well. You talked about how you do life coaching. What is the one thing that maybe people want to know about when you do life coaching, or what's your underlying message to the people?
Okay, so I've been a board certified coach. I started out back in the late 90s. I was trained. I went through the 128 credit hours for the professional certification. Been a member of the ICF for years. And then I became a BCC, which is the highest credentials you can get. You have to exhibit a certain level of mastery to get that level of certification. But I've got 30,000 hours now. It's all these years later. I've been coaching for a long time. Most of the time, what we tell people is that coaching is a conversation. And the coach doesn't have the answers. The coach comes alongside the client. The client sets the agenda. And the coach simply asks questions to get the client in touch with the answers, which we presuppose are already inside the client. A lot of people come to coaching expecting the coach to tell you what to do, when the actual profession of coaching is far more a conversation where the coach asks open-ended questions that invite the client to talk about where they want to be, what they want to accomplish, and how they want to accomplish it. And there's an art to that kind of asking of questions. There's an art to that kind of conversation. It takes a while to develop that. But once you do, those are very rewarding experiences to watch people blossom and unfold and discover their hidden potential and move forward. Because coaching is not, you know, therapy is about healing your past. Coaching is about creating your future. So the hardest question any client has ever had to answer, believe it or not, is what do you really want? And I have found in all walks of life, from every continent on the planet of people I've coached, when you ask them to be honest about what they really want, what they want is what can get them to what they want, but they never own what they really want, and that takes time. to get in touch with the deepest part of our heart, to own, what do I really, truly want more than anything else?
So the answer, the answer is kind of simple then. When you do talk to the people, it's seemed like they know what they want, but getting there, or how to get there, rather, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like you've got to, it's like if they're a deep well, you kind of just lower the bucket into the well with the questions and draw out of them what's already deep inside. Under layers, can be under layers and layers of misbeliefs, cognitive distortions, disappointments, setbacks, failures. But getting to that core is really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Mark, I want to give one more plug to your book. It's called Shadow Self. It goes along with everything that I think we've talked about today on this podcast. And I thank you so much for your service to others and for teaching for 50 years.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, sir.
God bless you, sir.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.